Chapter 14. Yasna 4. Yasna carefully composed herself, settling into the high-backed chair. It was refreshing to have an audience chamber again. 3 years at war had accustomed her to tents and temporary camps. The first palace's plushness felt almost surreal. Many of the rooms were covered with intricate mural-like carpets, and the walls of both hallways and rooms were crafted from seamless marble, made from smoothed clay that had been transformed through the power of ancient awakeners. Her personal audience chamber was as she had left it a year before. It lay in the Aleth section of the Ten-Winged Palace, and was decorated with a deep blue marble. The men of her personal guard, 8 in number, now that 2 stood guard at her mother's door, stood beside the pillars on either side of the room. The carpet was a dark maroon, depicting a scene from The Fall of Kanar. Brave Tanath, standing before the gates of his doomed city. There wasn't a single gemstone in the entire room, an oddity in Roshar, especially for a noble woman. The storm shutters were open, filling the room with sunlight. One of the maids, she noticed, had pasted paper glyph wards to each of them in preparation for the next high storm. Yasna was going to have to spend some time re-explaining to the servants her opinion on superstition. They couldn't even see how irrational their actions were. Most, if not all of them, were Vorin, and the religion taught that the storms and winds were the voice of the Almighty. Yet they still held to traditions centuries old, traditions that attributed ill fortune and mystical danger to the storms. Despite the annoying glyph wards, the room was relaxing. Sitting in her audience chair again, the world finally seemed as if it were regaining some of the order that had been scattered and confused these last 3 years. "Show her in," Yasna requested. Nelshenden nodded, pulling open the doors and revealing the person who waited outside. Yasna did not recognize the middle-aged woman, though her cloak bore the familiar glyph Pren, the mark of a scribe. Her tala was white, with little ornamentation, and she only wore one gemstone, a clear diamond ring. Behind her stood a younger woman, wearing a simple white robe and carrying 2 thick tomes. "My lady," the scribe said, bowing. "Lady Analesh," Yasna said, nodding. "I was sorry to hear of the death of your predecessor." Her words were very truthful. Yasna had worked very hard to gain the allegiance of Lady Shemlach, the previous royal treasurer. "It was an unfortunate illness," Analesh agreed. Her voice was careful, her face controlled. This was a woman who had worked hard for her station. The position of royal treasurer brought immense power. "I brought the ledgers you requested. I assume you have the king's permission to view them?"
"Of course," Yasna replied. "He is my brother."
The scribe didn't move. The implication was obvious. She wanted proof, in the form of written documentation. Unfortunately, Elokar was being stubborn. He claimed that now they were back in Ral Arum, it was time he began following tradition by using his wife as scribe instead of his sister. Yasna may or may not have been able to get Nanava to give her permission to see the records. Regardless, bowing to the woman's authority was not a precedent she wanted to make.
"Come now," Yasna said smoothly. "Everyone knows the trust my brother bears me. Before the war, I ran all of his affairs."
"With respect, my lady," the scribe replied. "That was before he was married. Lady Nanava is now the first scribe."
"I am the one he trusted to take with him into Prala," Yasna pointed out. That was the king's prerogative to decide, the scribe replied. However, I cannot release these records without proof of his consent. This time, Jasnah frowned openly, allowing the full brunt of her displeasure to shine on the woman. Analesh looked unfazed. Very well, Jasnah said. Kemnar, kindly go and fetch my brother. This finally got a reaction, if only a slight one. Even if Elokar hadn't been away at war the last few years, Analesh would have had little personal experience with the king. Her job was to keep the records. Nanava would be the one who actually interpreted them for Elokar.
My lady,
Kemnar objected, just as he had been instructed.
The king is busy in conference with his generals. He won't take kindly to interruption.
I see little other alternative, Jasnah said.
Very well, my lady,
Kemnar said, bowing, then leaving. Analesh's eyes flickered toward the door as it closed. Jasnah let the silence hang for a moment before speaking. Lady Analesh, might I borrow your pen and some paper for a moment? Analesh paused, then waved her aid forward. The younger woman deposited a brush pen and some paper on the writing board beside Jasnah's chair. Jasnah began writing with a nonchalant air, paying no attention to the woman waiting before her. However, out of the corner of her eye, she could see Analesh inching forward, straining to catch a glimpse of what Jasnah was scribing. Analesh breathed in sharply as she saw what the paper contained, a formal order for Analesh to be discharged from her position. All Jasnah would have to do was read it out loud in front of Elokar and get his agreement before three trustworthy witnesses. Lady Analesh stood quietly, watching Jasnah's brushstrokes with increasing nervousness. That's right, Jasnah thought as she wrote. Think carefully. You're relatively new to this position. You might know Nanava well, but you barely know the king. He's been gone too long. He's an enigma to you. You've heard stories of how important I used to be and how powerful Elokar's temper can become. You remember what I did the other week with the madman? Nanava might have appointed you while I was gone, but can she protect you now that I've returned? My lady, Analesh said. I hardly think we need bother the king. Jasnah nodded toward Nelshendon, who immediately left in search of Kemnar. Of course Kemnar would never have bothered Elokar, but Analesh needn't know that. The aide stepped forward at Analesh's order, depositing her tomes on Jasnah's writing board. A wise decision, Jasnah said, picking up the order of discharge and folding it carefully, then setting it aside. I will remember that you are a woman who can be trusted for her prudence. Analesh bowed her head deferentially as Jasnah reached over to open the first of the books. Jasnah paused, looking up at the treasurer. You may wait outside until I am finished. Analesh opened her mouth as if to object. Then her eyes fell on the order of discharge. Not destroyed, just tucked away. Finally, she bowed her head slightly and retreated from the room, her aide following. The books contained the records of acquisitions and expenditures during the last 3 years. Jasnah could decipher them easily. She had been in charge of finances during the first few years of Elokar's reign, before the escalation of the Pralan War. Jasnah scanned the lists. For a time, Balinmar had been the only one who requisitioned funds, as he had been authorized to do before Elokar left for the extended campaign. Balinmar's withdrawals were all carefully documented, explaining exactly what the payment was used for. He was efficient in his expenditures, as could be expected from the aged Stormkeeper. After a short time, however, Nanava's name began to replace Balinmar's. Yasna frowned, studying the woman's entries. She was only a few minutes into her analysis when Nelshenden and Kemnar returned. When they entered, Nelshenden nodded to the other six guards, waving for them to leave the room. As the door closed, he frowned in Yasna's direction.
"I don't like this deception, my lady."
"You didn't have to lie, Nelshenden," Yasna said, not looking up from the ledger. "You just went looking for Kemnar. There's nothing wrong with that." She glanced up when he didn't reply. His eyes were still troubled. "You think like a man, Nelshenden," Yasna said, looking back at the ledger. "This is woman's business, trust me. It's perfectly accepted. Someday your wife will do it too." Kemnar obviously didn't have any trouble with his part in the deception. He walked forward, regarding the ledger with curiosity. He would be able to read the numbers. They were based on the 25 Palin glyphs, which everyone could read. He might even recognize some of the glyphs in the requisition descriptions. The intricacies of the Pal language, however, with its confusing syntax, its nonverbal markers, and its mixture of the ancient tongue with the Aleth language, would be completely beyond him.
"You can make sense of this?" he asked.
"Of course," Yasna said, scanning down a column of entries. Nanava had started carefully, taking over Balinmar's duties one at a time, making payments to the city guard, royal scribes, and street maintainers. Nothing irregular. At first, she had followed Balinmar's schedules with exactness. It was not surprising that she had been able to make the switch. By legal right and tradition, the king's wife was the first scribe and had charge of all bureaucratic affairs.
"It seems reading would be a useful skill to have," Kemnar said musingly. "Kemnar," Nelshenden snapped. "Scribing is a feminine art. Would you have women picking up shard blades and dueling?"
"Of course not," Kemnar said, still regarding the page with interest.
"What does it say, my lady?"
"It says that our queen is a very clever woman," Yasna said. "It looks like she had Balinmar teach her what to do. Then about 6 months ago, she took over the royal finances completely. That's when the oddities begin to appear."
"Oddities?" Kemnar asked.
"Monies withdrawn without explanation," Yasna explained. "Never very much. Probably bribe money, used to expand her influence in the court. A lot of the projects she commissioned also appear to favor one noble house or another."
"My lady," Nelshenden said, "we must inform the king of this."
Yasna snorted. "Nothing she did is illegal, Nelshenden. She is first scribe. She may disperse the funds as she sees fit. Besides, I did the same thing when I was in charge." Nelshenden paled visibly. "I may have to shatter a few more pedestals today, Nelshenden," Yasna said. "If you wish, you may wait outside."
"No, my lady," he replied. "I will be fine."
Yasna nodded, turning back to the ledger, picking up her brush pen and taking notes on which cities had received aid, which projects had been advanced, and which requests for funds had been denied. The information was vital. Over the last week, Yasna had begun re-establishing connections with the court's women, making allegiances where she could, taking charge of those women, such as Analesh, that she thought she could influence. However, the women receiving the most aid from Nanava would be the most difficult to persuade. Yasna's time would be far more effective if she spent it on women who had been denied or ignored. Of those, there were plenty. One could not divert funds to the maintenance of certain roads, the building of certain ports, or the establishment of certain political treaties without offending ones who might have otherwise received favor. These would have to become Jasnah's core of support. "What of your search, Kemnar?" she said, as she began copying down the names of those women who had received the most support from the queen.
"Lord Balinmar was right about one thing," Kemnar replied. "Jezenrosh's sickness certainly wasn't debilitating enough to stop him from forming a strong political union against the king."
"Only political?" Jasnah asked.
"It's unclear," Kemnar said. "This isn't exactly my area of expertise. My contacts can tell you exactly how to find an underground awakener, but they don't pay much attention to high-level allegiances. From what I can tell, Jezenrosh is planning dissent, not coups."
Jasnah frowned, shuffling through the ledger and locating lists of women who had made petitions in court and been refused. Balinmar had spoken to her several times since the feast, but he still had nothing to offer by way of evidence beyond his own suspicions. However, these were grave. Rumors did indeed indicate that Jezenrosh was heavily displeased with the king, and several ladies at court had heard that the faceless shard-bearer had not come upon Elokar by happenstance. She needed control, and she needed it quickly. There was real danger in Alethkar. She could sense it. However, she wouldn't be able to gather the information her brother needed until her power in Alethkar was reestablished. She had to deal with Nanava quickly. As Jasnah moved through the ledger, something odd caught her eye.
"Emeralds again," she mumbled.
"What?" Kemnar asked.
"Emeralds," Jasnah repeated. "The ladies at the feast were right. Nanava keeps buying emeralds. Over the last year, she's steadily purchased them at higher and higher prices."
"Perhaps she simply wants to increase the stockpile," Kemnar said, "in case of famine."
"That's what the ledger claims," Jasnah said. "But I don't believe it. The palace already has an enormous stockpile." Jasnah paused, studying the ledger. She's trying to drive the price up for some reason.
"But why?"
Jasnah scanned the records, trying to dig out secrets that just weren't there. The ledgers explained the overt purpose of the requisition, but only in very simple terms. There were lines to show goods received in exchange for the money taken, and they showed that the emeralds had actually been purchased and delivered. Even the first scribe couldn't have gotten away with putting that much money into her own pocket. In addition, someone else usually did the purchasing. Nanava only gave the orders and arranged the deals. She had purchased from a number of different places, though one company did stand out. Chanal, a merchant organization out of Palinar, a fourth city in the middle of the kingdom. The door to her room opened, and a white-robed form stepped in.
"Lady Jasnah?"
she asked. Jasnah held up a hand.
"Tell Analesh I am nearly finished," she said.
"My lady?"
the attendant asked, confused.
"I was sent to bring you to the royal libraries."
Jasnah paused, looking up from her ledger, realizing that this scribe wasn't the same one who had accompanied Analesh.
"What?"
Jasnah asked with a frown.
"The libraries, my lady," the scribe explained. "There's been a disturbance." The madman looked quite different, with a haircut, a shave, and clean clothing. In fact, much of his wild eccentricity was gone. Jasnah now saw a man of mundane, if muscular, appearance. He could have been an average citizen, a military man, or perhaps a smith of some sort. He had a strong jaw and a handsome profile, without being overpoweringly attractive. The monks had given him a shirt of woven shenna and a pair of loose trousers, along with a sturdy thick cloak to protect against high storms. His light hair and rectangular face made it unlikely that he was an Aleth. If his accent was to be believed, he was probably from somewhere to the west. The area where the epic kingdom of Remak had once stood was now a refuge for bandits, tyrants, and mercenaries. Except for his great height, the man wouldn't have earned a second look had she passed him on the street. Unfortunately, he was rather hard to ignore, sitting as he was in the middle of the royal library, a stack of books on the table in front of him. Female scribes and historians stood nervously at the edges of the room, peeking in at him from other chambers and half hiding behind bookshelves. By coming here, the madman had broken one of the strongest traditions in modern society. Men were not allowed in libraries. "Why did you send for me?" Yasna asked, turning toward the palace guards, who stood just inside the library entrance. Even they were a bit unnerved by the taboo. Most of the scribes would be unmarried women, those who had never managed to find a husband, or those who had disagreed with the matches their mothers had made for them and asked for permission to become scribes instead. They now served as writers, historians, or royal glyph writers, and the library was their sanctuary. The guards regarded one another.
"We went to the captain," one of them explained in a hushed voice, "and he said you'd know what to do with the madman."
"You did take responsibility for him, my lady," Nelshenden reminded her.
Yasna frowned, glancing at the sheepish brown-robed monk who stood beside the guards. He was from Mercyhome. She recognized the glyph. The monks of Mercyhome appear to have grown more lax in their duties since I left for the war.
"Let me assure you, my lady," the monk replied, "the monastery is anything but lax. Most of the monks are quite diligent. I just happened to be a particularly bad one."
Yasna snorted, turning back toward the room. It was dim, each table lit by a small reading lantern. The white-cloaked women at the edges of the room were like ghosts, frightened yet fascinated by this man who pretended to be able to read. Apparently cleaning up his body had not helped his mind.
"Do you want us to drag him out?" the guard asked.
"Let me speak to him first," Yasna decided, walking into the library. Kemnar and Nelshenden followed closely, their eyes focused carefully on the madman. No taboo would keep them from protecting her. Yasna rounded the madman's table, studying his face. He seemed intent on the book in front of him, The Ezorpan of Balin, Shard Bearer of Vaidenar. An interesting book, less famous for the man's life it chronicled, but far more so for the justification, the commentary Balin's wife had added at the bottom of each page. The madman's face seemed far more stable than it had before. There was no fervor in his eyes, no imbalance to his movements. He flipped a page as he noticed her, then looked back at his book. Cautious, she seated herself across from him, laying her long-sleeved left arm across her lap and her right arm on the tabletop.
"The 10 epic kingdoms have fallen," the madman said in his thick Remak accent.
"Yes," Yasna replied. "About 1,000 years ago." The madman shook his head.
1,000 years, he whispered. "There have been long periods between returns. But 1,000 years. Even the first one was only 800. Most have only been 2 or 3 centuries. 4 at the most."
Jasnah wasn't certain how to respond. The epic kingdoms had been gone so long they were practically myths. Names of what had once been kingdoms were now used as general references to geography. The madman looked up at her, closing the book, his face pleasant.
"You are Jasnah Kolin," he said. "The king's sister. And you saved my life."
"Yes," Jasnah said carefully.
"You think I'm insane,"
the madman noted.
"I don't blame you. That is, after all, why we came up with the sign, so that we could dispel any doubts."
"The sign didn't work," Jasnah said. The madman nodded.
"So I noticed. I'm still trying to figure that out."
Despite his Rimac accent, or maybe because of it, he had a peaceful, quiet voice, very incongruous with the tempestuous way he had burst into the feast the week before. The madman glanced down at the book.
"I still can't believe they're gone. The book says the Oath Pact was broken almost before the Khothan were defeated. The kings must have been waiting, saving strength to spring on each other. We should have guessed. I never trusted Vadran. And Ronad wasn't very far behind. I never found out what happened, of course. I died early last time."
"For a man who's been gone for 1,000 years, Jasnah said tentatively. "Your accent sounds remarkably like that of a man from Rimac." The madman raised an eyebrow.
"Is that why everyone keeps saying I'm from there? I'd wondered."
He turned back from the book.
"What I really want to know, however, is why all of these books are written by women. And why do they all claim to be biographies of their husbands, when half of them spend most of their time offering commentary on something completely different?"
Jasnah froze. "What did you say?" she asked. The madman looked up, his eyes innocent.
"Take this book, for instance. It claims to be a history of a man named Balin. There's only a tiny bit about him at the top of each page, however. The rest is a rather interesting discussion on what happened at the dawn of the 10th epoch."
Jasnah leaned forward, shooting a glance back at Kemnar and Nalshendon. The madman was speaking things that weren't for masculine ears. "Who told you that?" she demanded in a hushed tone. "Who read to you from the justification?"
"No one needed to read to me," the man said with amusement. "I knew how to read before this world was founded. Though I'll admit that I didn't learn your version of it until the 6th epoch."
"Really?" Jasnah asked skeptically, leaning over and pushing his book down against the table. "Read that," she said, pointing at a paragraph.
"No one knows what caused the silence," the man said. "Or even if it occurred at all. Some scholars claim that the event never occurred, that awakening didn't suddenly disappear. They argued that the Oath Shard Wars brought on an era of distrust in mankind, and awakening fell out of favor for its mystery. Others attribute the loss of awakening abilities to a mystical connection to the Oath Pact. When one was shattered, the other broke as well. Regardless of the truth, it is obvious that some powers attributed to the legendary knights Apellion of the Epic Kingdom, wind-running, stone-warding, and the others, are no longer available to mankind, even if awakening itself eventually returned."
Jasnah sat back in her chair, stunned.
"Who are you?" she whispered.
"Talanel Elin," the man said frankly. "Some have called me Stone Sinew the Steadfast. Others simply call me the Soldier. Personally, I've always preferred to simply be called Talm."
"Talm?" Jasnah asked. The word was Pal, for rock. Talm shrugged.
"It suits me. Usually during returns, I spend my time hitting things,
Ishar and Jezrin are far better at planning than I am, which is why I was hoping they would be here already.
Yasna took a deep breath. He certainly wasn't the first man who had learned to read. Many Stormkeepers were thought to have taught themselves. However, he was the only one she'd seen admit it openly.
"Look, Taln," she said, leaning forward.
"You have to understand, no matter what you think, no matter what your mind says, you aren't a herald. You're a man, from Remak. Were you in a battle? Was your head wounded?"
"The sign's failure is a problem, isn't it?"
He shook his head.
"I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with this silence the text mentions. You really don't have Knights Apellian anymore? This is Alethkar. You should have Windrunners. The power was tied to the royal family."
"Windrunners are a myth, Taln," Yasna explained. "Please, go back to Mercyholm. The monks there can help you. They know how to treat people with your illness." Taln smiled.
"They want me to go work in the mines."
"That's a good job," Yasna said. "The king's mines offer steady pay, good for a tenth citizen. You may be low of rank now, but if you work hard, your grandchildren will have eighth citizen status. They'll be full Aleths, just like everyone else."
"I appreciate the offer,"
he said, voice growing solemn.
"But I can't accept it. The Hothan are coming, Lady Yasna. The creatures known as the Shadain, or Storm Shades, they will come in 1 year. In the centuries before the Epic Kingdoms were founded to unite against them, before Vorinism was founded to encourage men and teach them to prepare, the Hothan nearly destroyed mankind on 3 separate occasions. They won't stop until they succeed. This time they won't find a united Roshar to fight against them, and they've grown craftier over the centuries, come to know us better. I have to find my brethren. Failing that, I have to find a way to stop the Hothan on my own."
He leaned forward, looking her in the eye.
"I don't remember much from the last few days. The first few weeks after return begins are difficult. However, I do know you were responsible for saving my life, and I thank you. Dying now would have been terribly inconvenient. However, I must ask something else of you."
Yasna frowned. "What?"
"I need my sword,"
Taln explained.
"My shard blade. It is connected to those of the other 9 Ilin. Through it, I can feel where my brethren are. I need you to get it back for me."
Yasna shook her head. "That's not going to happen, Taln."
"If it doesn't," he said, standing, "then I'll have to find a way to get it back myself. That won't be pleasant for anyone involved."
He paused, looking around the room.
"I have a feeling I'm not wanted here. It has something to do with only women being authors these days, I assume."
"You could say that," Yasna replied. Taln held up Balin's Ezorpan.
"Can I take this? I promise I'll return it."
He probably had no idea how much the book was worth. For some reason, however, Yasna said yes, anyway. "Very well. Just promise not to return to the library again." Taln nodded.
"That's a deal, Sister of the King. Think about what I said. Time is short."
With that, he strode from the room. Yasna sat back in her chair, sighing to herself.